Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance.
This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to another episode of The Vampire Squid. We have a very exciting episode today. I have two of my good friends, Josh Zhang and Vinay Kumar, on the episode, and we're going to be talking about leveraged finance and real estate financing, two topics that these guys are experts in. Vinay, Josh?
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Hey, Alan, thanks for having us. Excited to be here.
Cool. So I guess before we jump into it, can you guys give me a quick background summary on, you know, who you guys are?
Yeah, sure. It's Vinay here. So I'm originally from Santa Cruz, California, and went to high school in the Bay Area. Grew up here and went to the East Coast for school. I went to Duke for undergrad and moved to New York and worked at Goldman in leveraged finance healthcare for 2 years. You know, for fun, I like to play sports, huge Duke basketball fan, and just hanging out with friends and stuff.
Hey guys, this is Josh. I grew up around the Detroit, Michigan area, went to college at Harvard, and then came out to New York where I was at Goldman with Vinay and Alan in the real estate financing group. Outside of work, I also like sports, hip-hop music, and just hanging out with friends.
Who's your favorite hip-hop artist?
Ooh, loaded question. I'd have to say Eminem for my roots.
All right, cool. It's funny because Vinay and Josh actually just moved out to SF, and I'm going to be moving out to New York. So kind of crisscrossing. But what do you guys think about SF so far?
I love it a lot. It's great outdoors over here. A lot to do, new city, new vibes.
Yeah, it's been a good experience. It's, you know, definitely different from New York, a lot slower. But, you know, you appreciate that, and everyone's really friendly out here, so it's good to be back.
Before we jump into LevFin and real estate financing, you know, what were your general thoughts of Goldman? You know, what was your takeaways or experience? You know, what did you guys think?
Yeah, you know, it's been I look back on it, and I think you get more perspective once you left. I mean, it hasn't been that long, but you can definitely have some time to think about it. And, you know, I think, one, the people were awesome. Really learned a ton from the people. Really enjoyed just, like, even the people in our analyst class. Like, I think it speaks volumes how tight everybody still is today. And so everybody kind of went their separate ways to some extent. But, you know, really smart people. The work was, you know, I learned a lot. I felt like we were drinking from a fire hose a lot of the time. And, you know, it was, you know, really a lot of days where you weren't really necessarily sure you knew exactly what was going to happen.
That's a good financial jargon. I should have added to my drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah. But, you know, it's great. And I think, you know, it's good to do different things and see kind of different sides of sort of the financial services industry. So that's sort of what led me to leave. But, you know, I think overall I had a positive experience.
Yeah, I completely agree with Vinay. Just want to echo what he says. During the time at Goldman, when you're in the weeds, it's a little hard to sometimes maintain perspective. But having the other analysts in the class there, having your friends that are there with you in those late nights really make it worth it. And looking back now, my friends and I and the other analysts I work with, we almost reminisce on our old times, almost like war heroes, but not nearly as cool.
Yeah, no, that, I definitely get that. I felt like a lot of the times, especially during late nights, it was similar to like an experience you would have during pledging, pledging a fraternity of sorts. But
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay, well, let's jump into what you guys did there. So, I mean, I have a very rudimentary understanding of LevFin and real estate financing, but I mean, tell me what is leveraged finance? What is real estate financing?
Yeah, so I'll start with leveraged finance. So I think the easiest way to sort of think about it is you have to understand that leveraged finance revolves around a product. So you think about what is that product? That product is debt, and then specifically it's high yield debt. So what does high yield debt really mean? Those are companies that tend to have a lot of debt on their balance sheet to begin with. So they are rated lower. They're a little bit of a riskier credit. So it's high yield because you're getting a better yield as a result of, you know, the riskier kind of credit that you're investing in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you think about it, you look at the different credit ratings and, you know, you have what's called investment grade debt. You know, those are kind of your blue chip companies. So think like Apple, Walmart, Pepsi, like, you know, kind of really your standard kind of blue chip names. Those were the companies that I typically did not work with. You know, the companies I was working with were probably a little bit lesser known, not, you know, depending on what space you're in, but, you know, we would work with a lot of large hospital corporations or large pharmaceutical companies. I specifically focus on healthcare. So, you know, leveraged finance, when you want to think about it more broadly, is really executing debt transactions for those types of companies. So, you know, say the hospital company we were working with wanted to go acquire another company. Well, that's great, but how are they going to pay for it? They often need to go to the debt markets to raise money to pay for that. So we would help them access the debt markets and raise that money so that they could go then complete the acquisition. So to your point, Alan, I guess it, you know, in terms of what you were doing at Goldman, it, you know, M&A and, you know, leveraged finance kind of go hand in hand in some ways, and that one kind of helps the other. And so I think that's probably the easiest way for me to think about it. I mean, I think the last thing I would touch on is you've probably heard the term leveraged buyout. It's a pretty big term that kind of gets put in the media a lot, and you hear that whenever you're kind of reading about finance. So understanding that, I just from like a very simple perspective, I think is important when you're looking at leveraged finance. So that's essentially when you have like a firm, you could have like a private equity firm, for instance, that's interested in buying a company. Mm-hmm. Often what they'll do is they don't necessarily want to purchase that company with all of their own cash and, you know, use it as equity. They would often want to take advantage of the fact that they could borrow money on that company's balance sheet and issue debt to help lower the amount of equity that they have to put in. And as a result, use that money to acquire the company and then use the cash that the company generates over the course of time to pay down that debt. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that's, you know, a better way of approaching it. And you can look at returns and that gets a little more complicated, but I think from just a very kind of basic perspective, that's sort of the concept behind it.
This is Josh. I think very similar to Vinay in the sense of raising debt. Real estate finance is often coined as sort of the leveraged finance for real estate. Our group is often known as the CMBS group, which stands for Commercial Mortgage Backed Security. Although that's also a bit of a misnomer since our group does balance sheet lending as well, which I'll get into in a second. What our group does is similar to what Vinay's leveraged finance group does for companies, we do for real estate transactions. So if a borrower wants to acquire or refinance a single asset or portfolio of properties, our Goldman would be one of the lenders that would provide financing for this transaction, either acquisition financing to help facilitate an acquisition or a transaction, or just a refinancing of existing debt, retiring debt that was already placed on the asset. A common question I always get is, how is real estate financing, the product group, different from real estate classic, the coverage group? To put it more simply, on high level terms, we focus more on asset level units, whereas in the classic group, they might focus more on corporate level M&As and IPOs, etc. And we focus on asset level transactions.
That was helpful. Thank you. Cheers to that. So yeah, cheers. I mean, we got a couple beers going here, but I mean, I can't believe they didn't do this stuff during training for us to understand different product groups. I mean, I really didn't know to the depth of just how you guys explained it in the last 1 minute. I mean, I think I have a much better understanding of it now, and I hope you guys listening do as well. So, I mean, with Levin and real estate financing, what are some of the things that, you know, you did like about it, and what are some of the things that you didn't like about the group?
Yeah, you know, I think things that I, you know, really enjoyed were the pace of it. And I think the interesting thing that you get with leveraged finance is that you really get a blend of a little bit of the M&A side, right? I mean, you're paying attention to who's acquiring who and stuff because they all need financing. But you also have to be very in tune with the capital markets. So you need to be looking at, you know, obviously more focused on debt than you are equity. That being said, the market's kind of, you know, play into each other. Like if a company's stock is kind of getting crushed on the equity side, sometimes their bonds will also trade down because investors are just generally kind of concerned about the company. It's rare that, it's not necessarily a direct correlation, but there are some kind of interesting things like that that will happen. You know, in terms of the work, you know, I think you would come up with some pretty cool structures to try and help companies find solutions and ways that they could access the debt markets in a maybe non-traditional way. There were even some times when we had a company that was doing an IPO and we simultaneously did debt financing. And so that was really cool because we had to go on a roadshow kind of for both at the same time. So, and you know, it's very interesting because the way you pitch the equity story is very different from the way you pitch the debt story, right? Because equity investors are always kind of focused more on the upside, right? Debt investors are really more focused on the downside. So, you know, they're really concerned about how much, you know, free cash flow is the company generating? What's the worst thing? What happens if this product goes off the market?
Yeah.
Then what happens to the company? So, you know, that's kind of what they're, you know, really concerned about. You know, IPO.
I guess dual track IPO debt financing. Did they go through both of it? Did they have to pick one at the end? How does that work out?
No, it was we went through both, and you know it was pretty interesting. Yeah, there's different ways to do it where you know in terms of timing. Sometimes they'll sync it up and they'll try to have like a simultaneous close the time of the IPO, so close of the debt transaction, the time of the IPO. But you know it really just depends. And often sometimes you'll see IPOs are used to help pay down existing debt that the company has. So when they pay that down, then they issue new debt again because they're at a lower leverage level and get a better rate. So yeah, you know, I think those were the positives. And, you know, I think in terms of things that I didn't like as much, you know, I think, you know, just like everybody else in investment banking, the hours can be kind of volatile, you know, especially with leverage finance, you get a little bit more of the kind of capital market early hours. However, if you're working on a transaction, then you also get some of the later hours with that going through committee and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that was kind of brutal. I think sometimes when you're not working on an LBO or you're not working on an acquisition or something, you're just doing like a simple refinancing for a company. It's a little bit less exciting. You know, you're kind of just taking out the company's old debt and replacing it with new debt. You know, it's definitely... You know, you're definitely focused on it, but it's not as exciting as, you know, maybe the company is making some transformative acquisition or something like that.
Yeah, no, that's helpful because I guess for my listeners, most of the subjects when I've been talking about it, IPO, M&A, it's been focused a lot on tech. And especially for the companies that are going through IPO, a lot of them, you know, don't necessarily have debt on hand and, you know, they don't even have earnings to sustain debt. So it's interesting to hear it from like the healthcare perspective, how you can do sort of that dual track. It's very interesting. And Josh?
Yeah. I like the equity and debt bifurcation that Vinay kind of spoke about, because in real estate, you see both of that as well, both on being on the real estate debt side and the real estate equity side as well. So what I did like on the debt side is that you saw a high volume of transactions. Closing a real estate debt deal, so financing an acquisition or a refinancing, would typically take 1 month, maybe 2 months at max. So the volume of deals, the number of asset classes, transactions, and different geographies you get to see during your tenure is a lot more than if you're on the equity side. That being said, one downside of that is since you're on the debt side, as Vinay said, you're focused really on the downside, not on the upside. As an equity owner in the real estate, you have the say in how the building is modeled, what type of granite countertops you're putting in, how you're converting the rooms into condos. On the debt side, you don't really share in the increase in profits that might come from it. All you're doing is hoping that you're getting your payments every month or so. Similar to Vinay as well, the debt side benefits being a product group that you have better hours than typical investment banking, though it's still not great hours. The hours are shifted a bit earlier as well. At Goldman, we also focused mostly on CMBS and senior mortgage lending. This might be getting a little bit too granular, but we are what's called higher on the capital stack. which means less exposure to risk. So usually debt is stacked as your senior mortgage, and then your mezzanine debt would come underneath that, which is viewed similarly as a blend between debt and equity, and then the equity piece. Being on the senior mortgage side, we typically have lower returns because we are more protected from any downside that might occur. And because of the lower returns, it's usually safer in core assets instead of more opportunistic assets, as you might be looking at when you're on the equity side. So a little bit of both, but being most people like to start a real estate career on the debt side because, one, it gives you a high volume of transactions you'll be able to see, and two, it provides the fundamentals for you for when most people go to the equity side, they can apply these skills.
So Josh, I mean, you mentioned CMBS, and that stands for commercial mortgage-backed securities, and I think correct. A lot of people probably, you know, maybe have an adverse reaction to that acronym ever since 2008. But I mean, could you expand on, you know, what that actually means?
Yeah, of course, Alan, happy to. CMBS, again, stands for commercial mortgage-backed security, and in essence, it's supposed to increase protection and decrease risk by pulling together different loans that are made mortgages and securitizing them into a single pool in an effort to enhance diversification. So at Goldman, what often we did was we would make a bunch of loans for different deals, and we would compile those loans together in what we call a conduit. After we hit a critical mass with the conduit, we would then sell pieces of the conduit to investors. You could tranche the conduit from AAA all the way to single B, and depending on their rating. And each one is, as you go down the capital structure, as I mentioned before, is subordinate to the one above it. So your AAAs get paid first, your double A's, your single A's, etc. That being said, your AAAs have the lowest interest rate, double A slightly higher, single A slightly higher than the double A, triple B higher than the single A. So that was one part of the business at Goldman, which was called the conduit business or the CMBS business. All of what we fund or finance through these loans, we'd eventually securitize and sell off to investors. The second part of our business was called the balance sheet side of the business. And this, we entered into a JV or a joint venture with the merchant banking division of Goldman. In this part of the business, after we finance either a transaction or refinance or make a loan, we would hold at least part of that loan on Goldman's balance sheet, which is why it's called a balance sheet loan. And we would syndicate the rest of the loan to either other lending partners or syndicate to other investors, depending on what the appetite is for the balance sheet. But that is seen as more of a merchant banking division role, which is why we have a JV with them to keep it sort of proprietary on Goldman's balance sheet.
Gotcha. And then I guess for 2008, for the mortgage-backed securities, from my understanding, it was, you know, I guess the AAA bonds were actually junk bonds or something like that, where the different assets that comprised of the CMBS or the mortgage-backed security weren't actually of quality. So, I mean, have we gone and introduced legislation or laws to help fight against that now, or what have we done there?
Yeah, great question, Alan. I don't think I can say that all the AAAs were junk bonds, but there definitely was a component where bonds were not rated as accurately or as diligently as they are today. The rating agencies are under higher scrutiny now, have different methodologies. I think there was also an issue of loans not being made intelligently. It's sort of funny working in the seat that I was in. A lot of deals would come for refinancing, and we'd look at the previous loan or the previous deal that was done, and you would see LTVs, which stands for loan to value, of 90% or over sometimes, which means that if a borrower was buying a building for $1 million, the bank was funding them $900,000 or 90% of the value. Now, if that building dropped below $900,000 or just 10%, then the borrower had no reason to make his payments on time anymore because that asset is known as underwater, where what you owe on it is greater than what the value of that acid actually is. So some precautions that we take now is we hardly ever go above 70-75% LTV for real estate transactions. There's a lot of scrutiny on leverage and how much debt is put on. And if additional debt needs to be put on, it would be called mezzanine financing, which is a lot more expensive than your simple mortgages. As I mentioned before, rating agencies have much higher standards now and methodologies that we have to learn, as these rating agencies are often what determine how our bonds get priced. As I mentioned before, they're usually tranched into AAA, AA, single A, and these tranches are often determined by the rating agencies themselves. So it takes more careful underwriting, a more acute attention to leverage, and a better understanding of real estate markets. I think the last component of what caused the CMBS crash is just being too long or being too aggressive in making certain loans in certain markets in certain areas at certain times.
Cool. No, that's helpful. I guess speaking about mortgages and houses and loans, what do you guys think about SF compared to New York housing and rent prices?
It's a good question.
They'll both bleed you dry.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know, but if you guys go look on Zillow nowadays, I think average median house prices in SF in New York for a one bedroom is, I believe, $3,800 or $4,000. It's insane. Okay. And, you know, for all the listeners, you know, I have a lot of listeners that are interested in, you know, different areas of finance. You know, what advice do you have for someone that's looking to break into leverage finance or real estate financing? How should they prepare for the interviews? What should they be doing now? What are some tips?
Yeah, I think from the leverage finance side, you know, it's a little bit different in terms of being able to speak about the markets to some extent, because people want to see that you are interested in the markets. And in all fairness, I think you do a lot of things that aren't necessarily market specific. You really dive into the understanding the companies and understanding the credits. You know, you'll get your financial modeling experience and all that. But, you know, I think people also want to make sure that you are interested in understanding, you know, if bonds price goes down, what happens to the yield, you know, those kinds of concepts. So I think, you know, trying to be able to speak to that stuff is kind of the extra twist that you get with leverage finance. And, you know, I think just generally, you know, people just want to see that you're genuinely passionate about the industry and passionate about if you're interviewing for an industry, a specific sector in the industry, like if you're interviewing for tech or you're interviewing for healthcare, you know, people would like to see that you have an interest in that area. But, you know, I think those are probably the main things. And, you know, and leverage finance otherwise mostly would be similar to your traditional sort of M&A banking interview.
Josh? Yeah, I'd say very similar to what Vinay said. An interest in real estate is definitely helpful. Most of the analysts in my group did have a real estate background, be it Wharton Real Estate School, Cornell Hotel School. However, as mentioned before, I went to Harvard and didn't study real estate, but just showed an active interest in it. And even that's enough. But most people do not expect you to be a real estate expert day one on the job. They don't expect you to know the jargon. Real estate is almost a niche of its own. My only advice is be sure to just try it out with an open mind. Talk to the people you're working with, especially those senior with you, and see why they chose to choose real estate, why they chose to be in the group. And if that's something that resonates with you, and if during your internship or your conversations it sounds like something you can see yourself doing, then it looks like you found yourself a fit.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, something you guys can also chime in on is, you know, really people just want you to be energetic, you know, excited about the opportunity, show that you're a hard worker. Those things are group agnostic. So, you know, whether you're interviewing for, you know, whatever, those are probably the things that people are looking for most.
I think that was a very good overview of each respective group, you know, what you guys do on a kind of day-to-day basis. I have some kind of shotgun fun questions for you guys too. So, lightning round. What is the favorite book that you've read and why?
Favorite book? I would have to say Predictably Irrational. Which sounds a lot nerdier than it is.
Favorite books and textbook.
No. So actually, it was one of my professors at school. But basically, like, his book's about, you know, in economics, people always say that, like, everyone's supposed to be a rational agent. If you think about human beings and, like, people, they're just not rational. Like, they're fundamentally irrational people. They'll make irrational decisions. So he has all these, like, anecdotes about, like, experiments that he conducted. Some of the experiments he actually conducted on our class in the middle of the course. But things like, you know, how excited people get when something's free versus when it's, you know, maybe 1 cent. But, like, they'll make irrational decisions because of, like, the concept of something being free. So, like, that's, like, a, you know, a tidbit. But it's a really interesting book, and it really makes you think about, like, the decisions that we make.
Yeah, this is Josh. I'd have to say Green Eggs and Ham. I'm just joking. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Catch-22 by Joseph Allen. I just think it's an amazing piece of literature.
Tell me your guy's best joke.
Knock, knock.
This is it.
Two.
To who?
To whom?
All right, Vinay. You want us to come back to you on this?
Yeah, I have to think about it.
All right. Did you guys have a fun job in high school? So, I mean, for example, I worked in the food industry in high school. I don't know if you guys know this, but I did a month-long job at Panda Express.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can just make like the orange chicken?
No, they wouldn't let me touch the food. Yeah. I would
pay to see
But I was the guy serving the food and talking to the people in the drive-thru. It was quite the experience. But did you guys have anything like that in high school?
Yeah, I had a number of odd jobs. I think I was a soccer referee for a good amount of time. I played soccer in high school and didn't do that for too long. I got yelled at by a lot of parents. It was hard to pay attention for extended periods of time.
Yeah, I used to tutor kids in high school. Which was fun though. You realize how hard the job is to be a teacher, to be honest. Like, there were just so many funny moments where I would be trying to explain something and people were just clearly not paying attention. It's just like, I can kind of like relate to that. So,
people just texting or Snapchatting.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess back, Snapchat
back then it wasn't even Snapchat. It was like they were just straight up ignoring me.
Yeah, they're Motorola Razors.
Those are good phones. What is your guys' philosophy on life? I mean, do you guys have any quotes or principles?
Philosophy on life.
I like to quote Jay-Z, you know, my namesake. Young car to go harder, go further, go farther. Isn't that why we came? Because if not, then why bother?
What song is that from?
It's Mr. Carter. Jay-Z.
It's a great song. Lil Wayne and Jay-Z.
Yeah, don't laugh at me,
Brad. I don't know how I'm supposed to follow that up. I really don't.
Do you guys have a favorite restaurant in the city?
In New York City or San Francisco?
You guys can do New York since you guys only been here for a month.
Yeah. Oof. New York. I have to say Lartuzzi.
Great choice.
It's an Italian place in West Village. Cool spot. It's like a small spot. They make everything like in front of you. It's cool.
Yeah, my pick would have to be, I mean, there's so many, but ABC Kitchen's always a solid choice. It's in the East Village, Gramercy. Very farm-to-table, kind of organic feel.
Guys, this is helpful. This is an awesome chat, and I think we could definitely go on, you know, for hours, but I think we need to start wrapping up to a close. Final question for you guys. How do you think we can go about helping increase transparency in finance?
Yeah, you know, I think this show has done a really good job just addressing issues. I was reading some people saying it's more like being in the trenches than like a hot top-down kind of view. I think just reaching out to people is the best way, because I think a lot of what you get in this show you can get from you know, by talking to people, just like having personal coffees. But it's really hard because there's so many different roles and so many different components to cover that you can't cover it all in, you know, one coffee chat.
I'd agree with Vinay. Just doing your research online as well, you'd be surprised how much information right at fingertips or with Google. And the best sources are just your friends, your families, your people in your network that are already sitting in those very seats.
Cool. Well, thank you, Josh. Thank you, Vinay, so much for joining us today.
I know people are probably going to have some questions, you know, about LevFin, about real estate financing. How do people get in touch with you? Should they go to your LinkedIn, your Facebook? How should they contact you?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be perfect. Feel free to share our LinkedIn profiles.
Cool. Yeah, I'll put your LinkedIn profiles in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. As always, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions for me or Josh or Renee, feel free to visit thevampiresquid.com and visit the contact form. And you can always personally email me at Alan, A-L-A-N, at thevampiresquid. Till next time, thank you all for listening again. Ciao.